Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 3 show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House and Penn State and Big Ten expert in the tackle of the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football, the Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
What's going on, Bill? How are you?
Oh, ready to go, man. What a great week of college, weekend of college football last weekend. A lot of upsets. We'll talk about all those. And, of course, we're going to hit the Penn State game real heavy and get into some details on that. So looking forward to it, and another big weekend coming up. I'm actually making a road trip this weekend, my annual trek to a stadium I've never been to before. So we'll get to that a little later as well. I'll let you guys know where I'm going and who we're going to see. So our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those who might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, go to Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment or question on the show. All right, well, let's go. Let's get to it right away. Keith, I hate to say this every week, but I just can't help myself. You know, as a longtime high school football coach, I don't get really too—I don't know if "gaga" is the right word—or too awful excited about a player. But I said it every week. I'll say it again. Christian Hackenberg is something special, and what a come from behind win for the Nittany Lions in a hostile environment up there at Rutgers. And the defense again was tremendous. The offensive line again was suspect. But the kid finds a way to get the job done. He is really, really something special. What do you think?
He is a once-in-a-career type of guy right there. I mean, what we're watching. My guy was Kerry Collins, and there's Todd Blackledge before him, Chuck Fusina, a long lineage of great quarterbacks at Penn State. But, I mean, Hackenberg is just lapping them right now. I mean, he's not doing that bad for a 19-year-old kid, you know. 2 years ago, he's in high school. Just unbelievable the poise the kid has. I mean, people were complaining this week a little bit about saying that he shrugs off too much, or he doesn't show too much emotion, or he shows too much emotion. And I'm like, can we just sit back and enjoy the kid? I mean, my God, I mean, the kid is an absolute stud. 3 minutes to go in the game, got to go down, got to get a touchdown, win the football game. What's he do? He hits three passes in that fourth quarter that I don't know if many guys in college football can make those throws. I mean, we're watching, you know, the future of Penn State, you know, the future college football Hall of Famer, possibly Heisman Trophy winner, in my opinion, the way the kid's playing right now. And the only thing that you nicked on a little bit with that offensive line, I mean, they got to get it together. Otherwise, I don't think Christian's going to make the 12-game schedule. So, that's the only thing that scares me are the hits that he's taken, but his leadership skills, his passing skills, his running skills, his decision-making, it's just been unbelievable this year. And I just think we got like 2 years of the guy. So on another subject, happy birthday there, Big Bill.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. We were going to try to sneak under the radar with that today.
Yeah.
Well, and that's part of my weekend celebration this week. Weekend going off to a little road trip with a couple buddies.
Nice.
Yep. But Terry, what's your thoughts on Hackenberg? I know you're a fan, and what's your thoughts after that hostile environment up there at Rutgers?
Well, first and foremost, happy birthday as well, Bill. Big 3-9, 39 years old.
Yeah, right.
All that football knowledge you've amassed in 39 years. Congratulations.
Hard to believe.
It's hard to believe. So, what an atmosphere. First, I want to say with regard to Keith's comments there about Kerry Collins. Kerry Collins, as he's mentioned himself, was a special player, you know, one of the best players to ever play there at that position at Penn State. So for him to have such praise for Hackenberg, you know, being so close to that situation, that's really saying something in my mind. When I hear him say those kinds of things about Hackenberg, you know, that makes me take notice. And I'm already a huge fan, as you've mentioned. I too think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I don't think there's any question about that. We've talked already, you know, the last few shows about all the great things he does, his arm strength, his poise. You know, he has a certain maturity about him that you just don't really see a whole lot with, you know, a lot of young people nowadays. And he's just he's a special, special player. I agree with you guys. He's going to go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play at Penn State. Heisman Trophy, most certainly. I think next year, you know, you're going to – well, we'll see what happens this year with Penn State. If they continue to win some games, his name might come up. But certainly next year he's going to be one of the front runners, I think. The only question with Hackenberg is, can you keep him there for 4 years? Because the NFL is going to come a-calling, and this guy is, like I said last week in the show, if there's ever been a prototypical quarterback to come through, I mean, Hackenberg's got to be that guy. I mean, you know, with 6'4", you know, the guy might be pushing 6'5", 230 pounds, you know, and he moves well enough. You know, they kept saying during the telecast that he doesn't like to run, and that might be true, but he certainly moves well enough to, you know, to elude some of those pass rushers and to at least set himself up to make some throws. So on the Hackenberg front, I mean, my goodness, this guy, he's special. So I think we're all in agreement on that front. The game itself was awesome. The atmosphere was tremendous. Rutgers, welcome to the Big Ten. I think they showed themselves well. We talked a little bit about this prior to the game that, you know, a lot of times with Rutgers, you know, it really does depend on their quarterback. And Gary Nova wasn't great. Gary, you know, he had 5 interceptions in that game. The team had 9 penalties. And when you play a good quality program like Penn State, it's very difficult to beat teams like that when you have, you know, that many miscues. Penn State was opportunistic, and like you guys said, they made some plays there at the end of the game. And, well, Hackenberg and the offense made some plays, scored the last touchdown, and won the game 13-10. Just a few things to point out. I don't want to take too much time here, but as you mentioned, Bill, the defense has been absolutely outstanding. I mean, when you talk about that front four and you talk about that middle of that front four, I know a lot of people going into the season, we talked a lot about Barnes and, you know, we talked about their ability to, you know, to be athletic and get after the quarterback. And they're doing that. They're creating a lot of havoc there on the edges. But the guys in the middle, Zettel and Johnson, I mean, my goodness, those guys are stout. Those guys are disruptive. And I know they're rotating guys in there, but that front four is tremendous. And what about Hull, the linebacker, the middle linebacker? He's all over the football field. He's a maniac. I swear, I mean, he was just running sideline to sideline. He was in everything. You know, Wardman and Bell are athletic guys that are most certainly doing a good job. And Amos on the back level is tremendous, kind of playing in that new role that a lot of teams use, kind of, you know, in that kind of nickel slash, you know, it's kind of a – he's a safety, but playing around the line of scrimmage sometimes, you know, that star position or whatever Penn State's calling it at this point. But the defense, you know, 11th in scoring defense in the country right now, 12.3 points per game. Total defense, they're only giving up 275 yards in 3 games. And mind you, they've played a few opponents that are pretty good opponents. So you got to give them a lot of credit there. Sacks, they're 21st in the country. And rushing defense, 7th. I know you were talking about this last week, Bill, about how many yards they were giving up. 68 yards per game. That's absolutely outstanding. So, I mean, that's really the biggest positive outside of Hackenberg is the defense and their ability to continue to be just very sound in their assignments. It's, you know, it's one thing when you watch a lot of college football and you watch teams like Penn State and the way they're playing right now, they're so sound in their assignments. You know, nobody's trying to do anything more than what they're supposed to do. And when you do that and you play as one team as opposed to a bunch of individuals, as you guys know, being involved in football, good things are going to happen. The defense has been tremendous. Offensively, you guys already touched on it, the offensive line struggling. They continue to struggle. They're 98th in the country in sacks, giving up. Rushing, this is the most crazy stat I think I've ever seen on Penn State. They're currently 117th in the country in rushing out of 125 teams. 75.7 yards per game. That, to me, is just – that's crazy. If someone would tell me that before the season, I'd say, yeah, that's not going to happen. So that, obviously, they have to get better in the run game. And passing offense, as we're talking about Hackenberg, they're averaging 360 yards a game passing. Now, again, if someone were to say, you know, Penn State, when you think Penn State, you think defense, you think running the football, you know, special teams, well-coached team, they're averaging 360 yards a game through the air, 10th in the country. So another great win for Penn State. You know, what a phenomenal start to the season. I actually did pick Rutgers in this game. I thought the atmosphere, I thought, you know, if they could not turn the ball over a whole lot, they'd have a chance to win that game. But Penn State most certainly did a great job in pulling that victory out.
Well, Keith, that leads me to a couple things that I was going to hit you with, and I'll switch my order first.
Yep.
The first thing I was going to ask you, I'll throw both questions. You can answer them as you go. Being an old O-lineman, you know, we're only three games in. Do you see the ability for this offensive line to get that much better during the season would be my first question, because I think it's pretty clear that if they're going to make a deep run into the Big Ten and maybe even a little bit further into the bowl season, that's got to get better. And my second question is, we would be remiss if we didn't mention Geno Lewis and Deshaun Hamilton, both with 100-yard games again as the wideouts. I wanted to get your thoughts on both of those things.
Well, I'll start off with the offensive line. I mean, there's nowhere to really go but up right now. I mean, it's just it's not inside running. It's not outside running. It's everything right now. And they're struggling up front. You know, we knew it going in. Four new starters going in there. The only guy that's really dominant right now is Donovan Smith, but you know what? I'll tell you, Adam Nelson playing right tackle. You haven't heard his name much this year, have you?
That's a good thing.
That's a mm-hmm. good thing when you have an offensive tackle and not really hearing his name a lot. The guys have started struggling a little bit, but, I mean, I would put that Rutgers front four up in one of the top two or three that we're going to face all year. That's just not me blowing smoke with everybody's butt or anything like that, but, I mean, that's a pretty good front four they have.
Yeah.
Again, the only place to go is up right now with the rushing. But, again, I just go back to, and it has been the fear everybody's going into the season, and here we are in the season still talking about it going into our fourth game of the year. You know, can they block for them? Can we get the running game going and take the pressure off the passing game? You know, is Hackenberg going to make it through the year? That's the biggest worry right now. You know, and it goes to the tight ends, too. I mean, the tight ends really aren't dominating that much on the outside as much as they have been in the years past. You know, so it goes all around. I mean, it might be a scheme thing. It might be a talent thing. Again, they're super, super, super young. You know, I did notice that they started running that pitch play on the goal line. Not on the goal line, but a couple times throughout the game, like that slow play and pitch move that we used to run back in the day with guard pulling and all. And it just had, you know, they build up, you know, stretch it out, cut up, make a pick and get through the hole and hit it. You know, it looked like a real slow developing play, but, you know, he hit that hole hard, and he took it. You know, we're not going to have that Kijana Carter, that, you know, Tony Hunt, Evan Royster, you know, all these great running backs we've had here in the last 10, 15 years of guys running through holes and running for 80-yard touchdowns. So that's not going to happen with this team. You know, they're not built for that. So, yeah, it's a big concern. It was a concern of mine 4 months ago when we did our preview show. It's a concern right now, and that is they have to get better. Otherwise, it's going to catch up to them. It's going to be one of those games like it'll really catch up to them. I don't want to see that game happen. In regards to wide receivers, they both got put on the what's the receiver list? The Blitnikoff list.
Blitnikoff.
Yeah, they both got put on that list today. So the emergence of those guys, again, the running game is going to take the pressure off that passing game. It has to do it. Otherwise, we're going to be in trouble, and those guys are going to get, you know, you start to see them get beat up a little bit out there. You know, there's a lot of big receivers out there. So, again, it goes back to the offensive line and tight ends. We got to be running that ball. Otherwise, you know, these quarterback and receivers are not going to make it. So, but the emergence of those guys is really taking a lot of pressure off of the offensive line. So,
yeah, tough to play at second and eight and third and nine all day. No, you're not going to be successful there all day.
Yeah. Completely agree.
Yeah, and their defense, you know, as Terry was mentioning, the defense has kept them in the game where they've had those situations where they weren't able to move the ball and had to kick it away, and the defense just has held solid. Now, Terry, I know you're a huge fan of Lewis and Hamilton already too. What was your thoughts on another 100-yard game and a huge play with that 53-yarder by Lewis there in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as Keith said, offensive line was one of the big question marks going in, and wide receiver was another one, only because they lost so much production off of last year's team, and they have a lot of inexperienced players playing at that position. But Lewis, you know, Godwin, they've rolled out a number of people out there, obviously. Hamilton is, just very smooth. You know, Hamilton, his ability to catch the ball, but, you know, to kind of get to that next gear and make people miss, and he's very fluid. He runs great routes. I mean, he's really fun to watch. And obviously, you know, Lewis, he's one of those guys that can really run down the field. So, I mean, I don't think you could have, you know, if you're a Penn State fan, if you're a coach, I don't think you would have asked for anything more than what you're getting out of that position at this point. And a lot of it has to do with Hackenberg and his ability to distribute the football. But, you know, my goodness, I think they're getting, you know, the ultimate production out of that position, especially considering the circumstances and having to replace, you know, quite a few good players and a lot of production. So, yeah, I mean, that's been a big part of their success has obviously been Hackenberg. But just those guys and their ability to make plays, not only, you know, when they're downfield, you know, when they're running, you know, some longer extended routes. But, I mean, a lot of times you'll see them just get the ball to them, get the ball in their hands and let them do something. And they do a great job of blocking as well. If you're going to run bubble screens and you're going to do stuff in the flat, you got to have receivers that can block, and the tight ends and the receivers have done a good job of making sure that they're blocking for their fellow partners there at that position. So, I mean, the production at that position has been tremendous. I don't think you can ask for anything more than what you're getting out of those guys at this point.
Well, I thought as the game progressed, those two offensive holding calls, you know, one that took the ball back out of the inside the 10-yard line and one that took points off the board, I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, there's no way we're going to be able to overcome this. This is, you know, we're just digging ourselves holes here, and it's not going to work out. What'd you think about – what were you guys thinking at the time that happened?
Well, I tell you right, as soon as I saw the official with me out there before the game, I said, oh, there's going to be a couple bad calls against us today. That's his M.O. That's the guy who Penn State fans just despise, absolutely cannot stand. So he's out there, and he has like 9 microphones on his face. So he sounded about as garbled as his refereeing calls on Saturday night. So
that guy's been around a long time. Was he there when you were playing?
I thought he retired like 8 years ago. Every year he's retired, but he keeps on showing up to do Penn State games. So, I mean, they had a couple bad, not bad, it was on them, those late hit on quarterbacks and personal fouls and stuff like that. So they called it very tight both ways, I will say. It wasn't very bad. You know, it was obviously the get the touchdown call back really hurt, and then the other holding call was against James. James had a touchdown called back, and then who was the holding call on? Gaia? I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
It was so his microphones were so garbled I couldn't tell. But you know, again, you can't take the points off the board like that. It's the ultimate sin to do that in the red zone. And Penn State's offense has been so good in the red zone this year, and then they were really struggling there this week. But again, you go back to Hackenberg and the poise he has, and how much they trust this kid. But it didn't matter in the end. It's amazing.
Well, Keith, I have to ask you this. I'll start with you real quick and then jump over to Terry. You know, the Nittany Lions are 3-0. They have UMass this week, Northwestern, who seems to be horrible, the next week, a bye week at Michigan, another bye week, and Ohio State comes to town. There's a possibility that Penn State could be 6-0 with the Buckeyes rolling in. At what point does the excitement take over Happy Valley?
I think it's here, to be honest with you. I think that people are up here sitting there. I think that we're very patient in that way, in my opinion, with thinking about that possibility of having Ohio State come in here. We're 6-0. They're 5-1. Because it should happen the way they're playing right now. Michigan would be a tough game there, but you tell me that UMass or Northwestern are going to come in here and take, you know, Penn State down in the next 2 weeks. You know, I don't see it happening, my personal opinion, but that's a strong possibility of 6-0 come October 25th.
Absolutely. Terry, what do you think? Do you think they can roll through this and go up to the Big House and win that game and be sitting 6-0?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think when you look at it, especially at quarterback and defense, I mean, if you can play really solid defense, which they are obviously one of the better defenses in the country, and when you have a quarterback like Hackenberg, as we've gushed over, you know, already in this radio show, you know, you're always going to give yourself a chance, especially when you have a team like Michigan who doesn't really have an identity. And at the quarterback position up there in Ann Arbor, you know, they're still struggling. You know, they turn the ball over. He just hasn't been, you know, as efficient as they want him to be. So the way I look at it, even in the Rutgers game, you know, you were posing the question, you know, were you concerned after some of those, you know, some of those things took place? And honestly, you know, for Penn State, they're going to go into pretty much every single game this year with an advantage at quarterback. They're going to go into it with an advantage at the most important position. Sorry, Keith, I know offensive line is important, but
I hear you.
They're going to go into it with an advantage at quarterback over every single team in the Big Ten. So can Penn State do – do I think they're going to be 5-0 going into Michigan? Absolutely. Can they win that game? Absolutely. Do I think they're going to win that game? I do, actually. I think they will be 6-0, you know, with the Buckeyes, you know, on the horizon there. And that's going to be a little bit of a challenging game. But with Hackenberg and that defense, if they can just find a way to just complement that passing game a little bit. I mean, finally, I don't even care if they run the ball, but if they just continue to use Belton and, you know, Lynch, and they try to give them the ball in space, you know, on these bubbles and, you know, on wheel routes or whatever, just get the ball in their hands on easy throws where it's almost like an extension of the run game, I think that'll serve its purpose. And if they can do that, I mean, they're going to have an opportunity to make some noise this year, and I don't think a lot of us expected that to happen so soon. So, if I were a Penn State fan, I would be really, really excited about the prospects of this year as well as, you know, obviously moving forward.
Well, I think it's a long way away, and obviously you have to play them one at a time, but I think I'm going to circle my calendar for October the 25th, 8 p.m., Beaver Stadium. The Buckeyes are rolling in. Mark it down. It'll be good to go. I'll be ready. All right. Well, hey, to close this segment off, I think we have to give a shout-out to James Franklin, his first Big Ten win, a big one. His team was ready to play, and they did a fine job, and hats off to him for number one, and hopefully there'll be many more while he's on the sidelines for the Nittany Lions. All right. Well, let's move on. Again, it wasn't a good day for the Big Ten, fellas. Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, Maryland, Minnesota all lost non-conference games. Gee whiz, what do you make of the start of the season in the Big Ten, Keith?
We're back on this, huh? You know, we went through this
last
week.
Well, only because they did it again the second week.
I know. It was the lesser-tiered players who absolutely got smashed around. I mean, Maryland losing to West Virginia, just get blown out by West Virginia to start the game. And they came back twice in that game, which was great. Showed a lot of intestinal fortitude is what we called in this show, correct? Yeah, so
right,
coming back on West Virginia. And West Virginia showed a lot of pizzazz coming back in that game to beat Maryland, but you know, Minnesota, all these guys, it's just, it's getting old, you know. It's just, I mean, is it not getting old to you guys? I mean, you know, Illinois, Indiana, and Indiana losing to Bowling Green. I mean, that's a tough place to play, I guess. I mean, Bowling Green, Indiana, is a brutal place to play, I guess. I just can't believe that. Iowa losing to Iowa State, okay, that's a toss-up every year. You got to throw the records out of the window. Who did Minnesota lose to? Did TCU? Is that who they lost to?
Yeah, Minnesota lost to TCU 30-7.
I mean, nothing. Just showing nothing, really, you know? I mean, it's just disappointing to me right now. I mean, I'm coming from, back the last 10, 15, 20 years, the Big Ten has been the big boy in the block to now just being, you know, just up there with the MAC schools right now, in my opinion. You're getting beat by MAC schools and, you know, no offense to the MAC schools, but I mean, it goes back to is this what the NCAA wanted with the 85 scholarship rule, you know, parity and stuff like that across the league, because they're really getting it.
Well, the game that really surprised me was Iowa. You know, Iowa coming into the season by a lot of the, you know, the national gurus, not our national guru, Terry House, but by a lot of them, you know, we're showing them possibly running the table and winning the Big Ten, and they go out and get beat by Iowa State. I mean, how can that happen? I don't get it, Terry.
Well, I think a lot of people were enamored with their schedule, which it set up quite well for them. But at the end of the day, they still have to go out there on the field and play the game. And they had a lot of returning starters back. But, you know, just because you return starters doesn't mean you're going to have a good team, you know. And I think in this case, they brought back, you know, the quarterback's a good player. They brought back a few good players, but they're just most certainly not executing and not playing at the level that they need to play at. I was a little bit surprised about the Iowa State game myself. But again, like you mentioned, I wasn't quite as high on them as maybe some others out there. But the Big Ten in general, I'm surprised that we've seen, you know, the caliber of play across the board that we saw, because one of my initial comments was, when you're looking at it on paper and you're looking at, remember, guys, this conference was probably the most mature conference in terms of returning lettermen of any conference in the country. So, again, when you're looking at it on paper and you're trying to digest and figure out, you know, where you think things are going to go, you know, they were set up well to have a successful season, and I think they were poised to maybe kind of get back in that discussion as being, you know, maybe the third best conference in college football. And on the field, it's just been a disaster. And again, as I won't go on and on about this, but as we touched on last week, you know, the teams that it's really going to affect down the line is going to be Michigan State. It's going to be Ohio State. It's going to be Penn State. It's going to be those teams that we think have a chance to maybe, you know, be in the conversation for the playoffs. So, unfortunately, you know, the perception of the Big Ten at this point is not good outside of, you know, Big Ten country. And really, it's deservedly so, because they just haven't performed on the field. So, you know, hopefully, you know, some of these teams will separate themselves in Big Ten play, like Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, and give themselves a chance to maybe regain some of that, you know, national, you know, prominence, because I think that's what it's going to take to get one of those teams in the playoffs. Either that or everybody else is going to have to lose two games.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess for the good thing for a Penn State fan is they play most of these teams, so hopefully they can win those games. But I'm with you. I think that we probably would have to be sitting here with an undefeated season to even get considered. And in the case of Michigan State and Ohio State, they've already got one loss. Surely a second loss puts those two completely out of reach. And Nebraska, you know, they're sitting here undefeated as well at this point, but they haven't played – well, they play Miami this week at home. I don't think they should have much trouble with that game. But then they have to – I think they play Michigan State here in the next couple weeks. So that will settle that out pretty quick. But I'm with you guys, and it is just disappointing. And every Saturday as the scores are rolling across the TV, I'm like, man, how can this be happening again?
I mean, it's bad. It's horrible watching them. I mean, watching Indiana the other day just, you know, getting run up and down the field by you know, a slug match with Bowling Green, I'm like, what's going on here, you know? Again, I mean, Iowa State, that's a rivalry game. It is what it is, you know. It's but, you know, Illinois is Illinois. And I just, it's just sad. You said, you know, people outside of the Big Ten are worried or don't look too highly upon the Big Ten. I'm in Big Ten territory right now. I'm in the Pennsylvania region there. I'm not feeling too good about the Big Ten right now. I mean, it's just not outside of the Big Ten areas. It's just bad. And you're
Keith. After about 6 years of having the conference kind of struggle in some of these high profile games, struggle in bowl games. Last year was a little bit better, but over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, they've had the worst record out of conference than any other, you know, power conference in college football. So, you know, I thought this was the year they were going to turn it around. And unfortunately, these were the three most important weeks for the Big Ten to kind of, you know, put themselves back in that conversation of being a competitive conference. And unfortunately, it just didn't happen.
Completely agree.
Absolutely. Well, listen, hey, do you guys like shopping online? And if you do, have we got the place for you? You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.southbeachshopping.com. That's south-beach-shopping.com. And click on the top Shop tab. From there, click Sign In /register to become a preferred customer. That's it. It's free. And you're free to look around to all the products and click on the All Stores tab and check out over 3,000 network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's all free to register. If you have questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. Okay. Moving on to our national look around, again, Saturday did not disappoint a college football fan. South Carolina was in a must-win situation hosting the Georgia Bulldogs, and they came up with a huge win, 38-35 at home. Terry, what did you think of that game, and what did you think of Coach Spurrier around the 50-yard line needing 2 inches and going for it with the game on the line? He loses that game if he doesn't make it, and he makes the 2 inches and maybe makes one or maybe a half inch more than that. What did you think of that call? And his comment after the game was basically, hey, it's 4th and inches. You got to be able to make that.
Well, Bill, is it surprising to you? We're talking about the old ball coach here, right? I mean, this guy is obviously still one of the better coaches in college football, and they knew what was on the line in this game. They knew after that first game against Texas A&M that they get themselves right back in the picture with a win over Georgia, and they've had a ton of success against Georgia over the years. Spurrier's done a fantastic job against Mark Richt in these games. South Carolina, defensively, you know, they weren't great. They were good enough. They did what they needed to do. You know, playing Georgia, my take with Georgia is this. You know, I think people got carried away with what they did in the first week of the season. And I understand that with social media and the way that we cover everything nowadays, that things, you know, it kind of fosters an environment for that kind of, you know, that kind of thing to occur. So I get it. But when you look at Georgia and you look at that game against Clemson, look, Clemson was really having a difficult time. And with Georgia, I kind of take the approach of, I'm not going to go there with them until I can see them actually get over that hump, right? Georgia's been one of the more talented teams probably in college football in the last 10 years. If you match them up player for player, position for position with almost every other school in this country, they're gonna compare favorably with most teams, right? Maybe outside of Alabama and Florida State. I mean, they're that talented year in and year out. But for some strange reason, and they've had good quarterbacks, they've had great running backs. Obviously, they have a great running back now. They have a great offensive line. They have a couple, you know, they have a lot of playmakers on the outside. Two of them didn't play in this game, which I think had, you know, something to do with them maybe struggling a little bit early on. But Georgia's just one of those teams, an underachieving team. It just seems like that's the case with Mark Richt and his crew. And fortunately, once again, they're in the same situation where they're looking up at South Carolina at the top of the East Division. Well, at least they're looking up at South Carolina. You know, Florida might have something to say with that, or maybe Missouri. But once again, you know, the old bowl coach figured out a way to rally the troops, and you had to figure they were going to play a little bit better in this game regardless. I mean, they couldn't look any worse. And I know we're going to get into it later, but that game against East Carolina, now East Carolina is a pretty good football team, and I think Virginia Tech found that out this week. But, you know, a lot of people were kind of down on South Carolina once again because they struggled with East Carolina, but that's a pretty good football team. But in this game against Georgia, South Carolina, the old bowl coach, they seem to just have their number. Todd Gurley, to me, is, you know, we talked about Hackenberg at the quarterback position. Todd Gurley is kind of, you know, the guy at running back. I mean, the guy is just absolutely tremendous. You know, I don't know how people tackle him for, you know, for 4 quarters. I mean, the guy is an absolute beast with pretty good top-end speed for a guy that's 235 pounds. But Georgia, you know, at the quarterback position, you know, they struggled a little bit there. You know, it wasn't perfect. And, you know, the game was it was a whole lot of fun to watch. I mean, there was so much talent, so much speed, you know, so much. For Keith, I'm sure watching the SEC sometimes and watching the interior guys work, you know, a lot of people always, you know, will ask questions about, you know, what separates the SEC from other conferences. And the first thing people say is, well, speed, and they think skill players, and they think running backs and that. But the truth of the matter is, and I'm sure Keith would confirm this, the truth is that there's the SEC in the trenches. That's where they separate themselves. The athleticism across the board on the defensive line especially is really where the SEC kind of separates themselves from most conferences. Now, a lot of those, you know, 6'4", 320-pound defensive tackles grow on trees down there, where in a lot of other places they just don't seem to do that. But watching that game, it was a lot of fun as, you know, somebody that follows college football as closely as I do. And it wasn't surprising that Spurrier made the call. It wasn't surprising that to me that South Carolina won the game. I picked them to win the division at the beginning of the season. I still feel like they can do that. They're not perfect. They have a lot of issues. But, you know, whenever Spurrier has a chance at Georgia, I just, you know, I kind of lean towards, you know, that side of things. But it was a great game, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'd love to hear what you guys, you know, have to say about that.
Keith, what'd you think?
Unbelievable. You know, you're right on with the athleticism of the defensive lines and the front sevens in the SEC. I mean, everybody says it's the speed, you know, the running backs and the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the defensive backs. But I'm telling you right now, if you don't have a good offensive defensive line, I mean, I'll preach that every week I thought Georgia had a pretty good offensive line, but South Carolina's defensive line took care of them. Great game to watch. Spurrier going forward late in the game like that. It's just perfect. I love what he said. It's a couple inches. We can't get a couple inches. We're not a good football team.
Yep.
He knew the season was on the line. He had to get 2 inches for his season to get back on track. 2 inches is all he needed. So he rolled the dice, and he rolled it well. I mean, they picked it up. They had no problem. I mean, obviously, it was sort of turned into a closer call than I thought, because I thought he had it instantly. But I don't know if it was a good spot, bad spot, but showed a lot of heart getting that first down there, because they needed that right then and put them right back into it. They are right back in the national picture.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I actually, and I think I texted Terry at this time, I said, I didn't think he got it. I didn't think he even got back to his center. But, you know, when you only need 2 inches and you get 3, I mean, you're splitting hairs right from the start. The center probably had the first down as soon as he put his hand on the ball. You know, and I agree with you from Spurrier's standpoint. Of course, he looks like a genius because he made it. But it just sure seems like it was a great punt situation and make the other team go 80 or 90 yards in a very short time. But I know your old coach, Keith, he'd have punted the football right there.
Yeah, I'd have to say so, too. But I hope he'd have enough respect in us to actually get that get a couple inches. So.
Hey, Bill, but you know the difference is that he also would have a lot of confidence in his defense to stop somebody. South Carolina, they were having a lot of trouble at that point.
Yeah, you're right on that. You're right on that. All right, well, Keith, let's move on to the next game. And your boy Sark brings his USC Trojans across the country to Boston College after his huge Stanford win and just got thrashed by the Boston College Eagles. What in the world happened there?
I'd love to know their travel plans, because they look like they showed up a little bit late. You know, having played cross country games, I remember we had played USC a couple home and homes when I was here, and it's tough. It is really, really tough. You're leaving Thursday night, Friday morning, whatever. You get out there, a 6 or 7 hour trip getting to and from. You know, ease your mind on the game. You're used to an hour and a half trip, and now you're playing for 4, 5, 6 hours, driving here, driving there, getting all. Your head's not in the game. It's real easy for that to happen. Some of the Vegas people were probably happy that happened, in my opinion. there was definitely, you know, there's a lot of love in that game right there. The red bandana game. I love what Boston College did with that whole red bandana thing with the Wells Crowder stuff. That was just, I mean, I don't care. Sorry, you're a USC guy, right? So, I mean, you actually had to look at that and say, you know what? I wouldn't mind losing to this team tonight. You know, it was like one of those things that meant so much to those guys. But the game, I mean, it's just, you know, Boston College, they literally played it. They had 12 or 13 guys on the field, in my opinion. Going back and forth, watching the game, watching a couple different games, Penn State, this game, South Carolina, they all run together. But, again, it's so tough to travel across the country. Then you add in the huge upset, not a huge upset, but a big win over Stanford the week before. 6 days later, you're traveling across the country. You know, you can almost see the writing on the wall on that one. Tough place to play. The Irish, the Irish screwed up in Boston. They were going a little crazy that night. So, very tough place to play. We thought Rutgers was bad. I'm sure Boston College was twice as bad, twice as hostile up there. So, again, you know, you feel good for – you know, the whole red bandana thing. That was a really cool thing that Adazio did up there. So, enjoyed watching that. So, I picked USC. Did we all pick USC in that, or we didn't pick that game? But
we didn't have that game.
Yeah, we didn't have it. But, yeah, tough game.
We would have all taken USC, I'm sure.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt.
Terry, are you still in mourning?
Well, you know what? Not so much. I mean, when you look at that game, the way it was played, I don't think you can do anything but give a lot of respect to Boston College for essentially out-coaching, out-preparing, out-hustling, out-playing. I mean, they dominated every phase of the game. USC, like Keith said, they just didn't show up. I mean, and that's difficult, you know, especially coming off of a game, you know, where they were so high after the Stanford win. But I'm a little perplexed by, you know, some of the play calling, and I don't think USC has really developed an identity after 3 games. I mean, we've kind of seen, you know, two or three different takes on what they want to do offensively. And, you know, against Fresno State, they rolled up 700 yards. They threw the ball all over the field. And I understand Fresno State's not a very good football team. But, you know, if you're creating an identity, you want to make sure that you do that every week when you go out. I mean, that's who you are, right? And then against Stanford, they just ran the ball the whole game, and they weren't very multiple in what they were doing in terms of their sets and such. And then this game was a little bit of the same thing, a very conservative approach. So, you know, they deserve to lose based on, you know, just not being prepared. And I'll tell you this, being somebody that's followed the Pac-12 for as long as I have now, USC is one of those teams where, for some strange reason, this goes back to even before Pete Carroll, but mostly through Pete Carroll's his reign there, the teams that would give USC trouble are teams that were a little bit abnormal, teams that ran the option, teams that had quarterbacks that ran a lot. And in this case, Boston College threw for 50 yards. They weren't efficient throwing the ball. They didn't even try to throw the ball. Their quarterback ran for 191 yards. They rushed for over 440 yards in this game. And
yep.
And like you said, on defense, guys, I mean, I think he said it looked like they had 12 or 13 guys, and that's just effort. When you really boil it down, look, USC is better than these guys. USC is not the USC of the 2000s where they get off the bus and, you know, everybody looks at them and then they just leave after the game after they win by 20 on the road. I mean, that's not happening right now with 56 scholarship players, you know, with teams not looking at them the same way. You know, the sanctions have really impacted them, and they're not that team. They don't have that confidence. They don't have that swagger, and teams don't look at them the same way. So, you know, it's not as easy as just showing up. And that's what they thought. They were going to show up against Boston College, and Boston College, with everything that was going on with the ceremony, as you pointed out, Keith, that was, you know, of course, it was heartwarming. And when I saw that, I you know, initially thought to myself, this probably is not going to go over very well. And it didn't. And Boston College, they deserve all the credit in the world. They dominated that game really from about midway through the second quarter on. So not really mourning, just, you know, have a lot of respect for what Adazio is doing up there. And, you know, I don't think that Boston College team is a great team, but I'll tell you what, that night they played really, really good football, and they deserve to win that game.
Yeah, and what about the two other major upsets? The Virginia Tech Hokies come off a huge win at Ohio State. They get beat by East Carolina, who, as we mentioned, is a pretty good football team in their own right, in a game they never led. And then Louisville, who looks like they're lights out, loses to a Virginia team who is not supposed to be very good, but they're 2-1 now also. Go figure that. What about that, Terry?
Yeah, well, the first one, in watching that game, I wasn't that surprised. When you watch East Carolina play, and they rolled up a ton of yards against South Carolina the week before, and they really should have won that game. South Carolina should have been 0-2 going into that game against Georgia. But East Carolina is a pretty talented football team. They're going to be difficult for anybody that matches up with them. And, you know, watch out for them in a bowl game because, like I said, they're going to give people fits. That's a talented team. They have some wide receivers on that, some big guys that can make some plays. The quarterback is a really talented kid. So it didn't surprise me that it was a competitive game. It most certainly surprised me that Virginia Tech just couldn't do anything offensively. East Carolina, that I knew their offense was good. I didn't expect their defense to play quite as well as they did. And I think that was a product of, as Keith was pointing out earlier, you know, they kind of took the same approach that USC did. They looked like they were sleepwalking there early on. Brewer wasn't very efficient. The offensive line didn't do a very good job in terms of opening up holes for the running backs, and the receivers just didn't set. I mean, it was just for about three quarters there, it was just a complete sleepwalking affair, and that most certainly was a hangover from Ohio State. So that game, it didn't surprise me that it was competitive. It surprised me that East Carolina controlled it, and they controlled that game for pretty much the entire game. That was a little surprising, but East Carolina's a good football team. They really are. And the second upset, so Louisville, yeah, that was a little surprising as well. You know, Virginia, they played really well against UCLA. They were defensively, I think Virginia is a pretty good football team. They actually have some pretty good talent up there. I don't know how closely you guys follow recruiting, but they've done actually a pretty good job of securing some in-state talent the last couple of years, mostly on the defensive side of the ball. So they most certainly were stout against UCLA, and I think they had 5 or 6 sacks in that game, and they were really good in this game as well. And Louisville, you know, again, kind of in the same situation. They kind of walked into a little bit of a trap, and, you know, and that's how it goes sometimes in college football. We see it every week. You know, we're praising teams, and the next week they don't show up. So the first one, not so surprising. The Louisville-Virginia game, a little surprising, a little more surprising, being that You know, Louisville offensively is just, you know, light years ahead of what Virginia is really kind of working with at this point. But love to hear your guys' thoughts.
Yeah, I'd have to say the Louisville and Virginia game was not even on my radar. You know, it wasn't even one I thought, well, let's just check in on this game. Then I saw the final score. I was like, holy cow, how'd that happen? Keith, what did you think about the Hokies, East Carolina? Did you get to see that?
I saw that actually went up 14-0, and I was watching it. I was doing some stuff. I had, you know, getting ready for it. I had people over the house Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. So it was all in the background, and I'm just like, you know, and everybody was warning Virginia Tech to be on upset alert, upset alert, upset alert. Every Fox Sports 1, ESPN, all the talking heads across, they say, you got to watch out. And I just can't believe that Beamer fell for it. You know, Beamer went in there and, I mean, it's not Beamer's fault, obviously, as a coach. He probably warned his guys and probably suspected something was going to happen. But, you know, if everybody in the world saw that coming and it still happened, I mean, come on now. The Louisville-UVA game, that was surprising to me, too. But then I go back and I think about that, how UVA really should have beaten UCLA. UVA should have beaten UCLA. And then, you know, again, it was like one of those games. It was like a ho-hum, ho-hum, ho-hum. I'm not thinking about that game, but then the game started going on. And you're like, wait a minute, UVA's pretty damn good. I mean, you know, they took UCLA. UCLA did what, 3 defensive touchdowns to win that game? And
yep.
Yeah, it was one of those sleeper games that no one thought about, and it came out to be one of the big upsets. But I just, Steve Spurrier talked about East Carolina before, saying, you know, we're playing East Carolina. They're just as good as a Big Ten school. I mean, I think that they proved that. You know, I mean, Virginia Tech beat Ohio State. East Carolina beats Virginia Tech, so I guess East Carolina could be a Big Ten school. So,
well, they might be looking for a conference affiliation, actually. So that's a good idea.
Yep. Well, go ahead,
Keith.
I was just going to say the outcomes
of these games. You know, my oldest son is a college football coach, and I think these games this week are. He says it perfectly, and he said this 2 years ago. He said people don't realize, the general fan doesn't realize how hard it is to win every single week.
Yeah.
You know, and the fan base thinks because, you know, the blue and the white or the red and the white or, you know, the garnet and the gold runs out on the field that they should win. And whether it's traveling across the country, a key injury, something that happens, you know, there's a fight in a dorm room, you know, all these things that play into winning a football game on Saturday, and it's just not easy to win them all every year, every week. It's tough, and like I say, the regular fan just doesn't appreciate that.
Yeah, it's so true. Your son is so right, and you know, being a former, you know, college coach as well, I think I mentioned this last week, and I just had a conversation with someone earlier. The average fan thinks about college football like they do the NFL. Like they have no earthly idea. They remember college, but they have no earthly idea what the student athletes go through on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah.
And being on that level in front, you know, because look, college football is big business. College football is, you know, probably the second most watched sport in this country behind the NFL. So I mean, we're not talking about even the old days of college football. I mean, it's a whole new environment, right? And then you couple that with, you know, these student athletes being 18 and 22 years old. So I always tell people the hardest thing about being a college coach has nothing to do with the schematics, has nothing to do with recruiting, has nothing to do with being around the players all the time and, you know, coaching them up. The hardest part about being a coach is just, you know, you have no idea what you're going to get day in and day out from student athletes. They're 18 to 22. As you mentioned, Bill, they have so many different things going on in their life, school, girlfriend issues, family issues. You name it, they're going through it. And the difference between a college football player and an NFL player is that college football players have 20 hours a week to do their football-related activities, where in the NFL you have them 13, 14, 15, 16 hours a day. So, I mean, your son is so right. And as a coach, that's what I tell people as well, is that you just don't ever – you never know what you're going to get. And that's why you see games like this where the kids just don't – you know, they just don't show up. You better believe that Sark and that Beamer, and they were sitting their team down all week talking about letdown, talking about, you know, making sure that you're doing what you need to do, you know, making sure that everyone's prepared, everybody's on the same page. But when you get in that game, right, it's easy for a student athlete to get up for a big game when Ohio State's playing Penn State. it's a little bit more difficult when you walk into Boston College and it's a dingy, you know, it's not very lit. It's not lit very well. There isn't as many fans as, you know, you might be used to in the Coliseum. The coach prepares for that. The student athletes mentally, they have a hard time processing that sometimes and doing what they're supposed to be doing. So that's kind of my little diatribe on coaching. But I find that to be the most interesting thing. And, you know, your son is so right. You know, regular fans, general fans really don't understand what it's like to be a student athlete and to be a coach and to go through that whole process.
Keith, as a player, what's your thoughts?
Yeah.
I mean, and you did win them all.
Yeah, well, just think about some of those, like, midterms. You know, you got papers due, you got exams that week, and, you know, you're not getting as much sleep as you should. I mean, I wasn't really the academic genius that I come off as right now, but come on. But you're in college, you know, you have tests, you have papers due and stuff like that. You don't know when all that stuff's going on in players, and, you know, girlfriend breaks up with you, mom and dad are having problems at home, you know, just the crazy stuff. You know, it is a huge thing that you have, you know, as Coach as Joe Paterno would say, I had 105 kids, 125 kids on the team, 105 had scholarships. You know, he really had to look out for them. And, you know, there's so much that can go into it. I mean, I was Division III coach for 5 years, and then you see it all the time. You know, you could always tell how practice was going to be. Thursdays were always bad because Wednesday was the big night out in town, and you know how it is. And people realize that, and, you know, again, it just alarms me that Frank Beamer did not have his guys ready to play that game when everybody in the country knew they were going to be on upset alert. That's just, you know, that's what makes it fun to watch, man.
That's right. And surely, you know, Beamer's been around a long, long time. Surely he didn't do anything different in his preparation and his coaching staff's preparation. Kids just didn't get the job done.
They didn't respond. I guarantee you when Frank Beamer watched East Carolina on tape, I guarantee you he was telling his players, and we've all been there as student athletes, we've all been involved in coaching. We've heard our coaches, and I remember myself telling players, you know, this is a good team. You guys need to be ready. But however that message is delivered, sometimes it's not received the way you want it by the student-athletes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. All right. Well, you guys know as you start to get a little older, some of those aches and pains start to really take over. For me, it was a chronic right shoulder from too much football and too many games behind the plate. It got to the point that it was really affecting my quality of life. I finally listened to a friend that kept suggesting I go to www.southbeachshopping.com and order a bottle of OPC3. It's an all-natural isotonic product that reduces inflammation. I took a couple capfuls a day, mixed with water, for about 3 weeks, and my shoulder pain went away. It still pops and cracks, but it doesn't hurt, and that's what matters the most. I'm back golfing and even pitching batting practice sometimes. It's OPC3 and available at www.south-beach-shopping.com. To register for free, click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. Type in OPC3 in the search bar and you can drill down and read all about the details. OPC3 is now part of my early morning routine and I'm glad it is. All right. Well, let's take a look at our predictions from last week and see how we did, and we'll make this week's picks as well. And I have to apologize because I didn't do my homework last week, and I put the Temple and Villanova games in, and they both had byes. So we'll slide them to this week, which only gives us three games that we picked in week three, and that was Penn State at Rutgers. Bill and Keith took Penn State, and Terry was the Lone Ranger out there with Rutgers. So your 7-0 last week starts off this week with a loss, even though you had good reasoning.
I think I had pretty good sound reasoning, but like I said, when you're playing a good team and you throw 5 interceptions and have 9 penalties, that's not going to get the job done. So, like we already commented on this, Penn State, I mean, it's a good win for Penn State.
Yep, and we used the same. You used the same reasoning at Georgia, at South Carolina. You took the Gamecocks, so you got the win. When Keith and I took the dogs, and we looked like dogs in that one, Keith.
Yeah, looking at it now, I wish I hadn't watched that game and just realizing how much it was a game changer for, it was a year breaker for the Gamecocks. I should have gone that route.
Yep. Even after when we got off the air, Terry and I were talking back and forth, I said, you know, I really wanted to take South Carolina, but I just thought Georgia had too much talent and would win the game.
Thought it would be their year finally, right? That's the way I thought about it, too.
Yep, yep. Nebraska at Fresno State, Terry, we had to throw that out for you, and we'll just beat you around for probably the rest of the year on this pick, especially if we get down to the wire and our predictions are close. We will remember week three, Terry took Fresno State against Nebraska.
Oh, my goodness. What a pick, right? No, I have to say I was surprised Nebraska did what they did in that game, and I know Fresno State has not played well. They've actually got progressively worse through three games, and usually you're hoping that your team's moving in the right direction, but that's not happening at Fresno State. And, you know, they actually returned quite a few starters, and the quarterback position was obviously the big one, and they're really struggling there. So totally missed on that one. That's just a horrible pick on my part, so you guys can most certainly give me a hard time the rest of the season for that one.
Well, that brings us to Bill is in the lead at 12-4. Terry and Keith are 10-6, so we got a two-game lead. It won't take me long to lose a two-game lead because I couldn't pick I couldn't pick heads or tails 10 times right. So I'm not feeling too happy about my lead, but better to be two up than two down at this stage of the game. All right, let's hit these picks real quick. We got a lot of games I put on here this week, so let's hit them quick and because we're running out of time. UMass at Penn State, I know Keith and I are at Penn State. Terry, you on board this week?
Well, I was going back and forth. Of course not. Of course I'm going with Penn State. Stop.
All right. Last week we all took Temple and we all took Villanova, so I assume we're going to stay with that one.
Yes.
Number 5, Auburn at number 20, Kansas State. That is a Thursday night game at Kansas State. What's your thoughts on that? What do you got, Keith?
I'm making up that two-game swing right now. I'm picking K-State with the upset. Bill Snyder bringing the upset out. Thursday night magic in Manhattan.
Terry?
Yep. Well, Keith is very smart, obviously. He's a Penn State grad. He's very smart. But I'm going to actually go the opposite. I'm going to go Auburn. I like what they're doing, and I know we don't have a lot of time, so we won't get into it, but I'm gonna go with Auburn to win a game that's pretty darn close.
All right, I have been to Manhattan, Kansas, and I saw what Coach Snyder does out there. I'm going with Kansas State as well.
You guys are both smart.
All right, Keith, Clemson at Florida State. I had to throw this out here just because it's two ranked teams, but I think it's probably a pretty easy pick.
Well, before we get to it, what stadium are you going to, big man? We only got 3 minutes left. I'm waiting for you
to
say what stadium
you're
going to.
Well, we're going to get to it.
Okay, all right. I will take the Seminoles, the Criminals.
Okay. Terry?
Florida State.
All right. Number 4, Oklahoma at West Virginia. I will be in Morgantown.
Oh, going to see Mr. Scrap. I got you.
Going to see Scrap, actually. Dad texted with him today, going to catch up with him before the game for a few minutes, and looking forward to that. But I have an in with a radio guy who will be broadcasting the game on Touchdown Radio, and he's doing that game, so I'm freeloading along and going to get to go to that. So Oklahoma, West Virginia, who you like?
Taking the Sooners, sorry.
Yep, me too, Boomer Sooner.
Well, I hate to say it, Scrap, but so am I. Okay.
Ooh,
Wild card game. Rutgers at Navy.
I like this pick because Rutgers has got to come back from a tough loss. Tough loss at home, and they got to play a tough Navy team who I have been touting for how long about how hard it is to play the triple option.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Navy.
Terry.
Bill, I would love to go with Navy. I really would, but I'm actually going to go opposite of that. I'm going to take Rutgers. I think Rutgers bounces back, and they find a way to win a very close game against Navy.
All right. I'm taking the midshipmen. All right. Well, that brings us close to the top of the hour. We'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and the Goon, Keith Conlin, for their great insights. We'd like to remind our listeners that we will be back next Tuesday night, September 23rd, at 7 p.m. to talk about week four as well as the upcoming week. You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show.